So I guess I'm in Yerushalayim now. Okay, Baruch Hashem. Okay. Anyway, I did miss, however, I left the day before Yom HaAtzmaut, and I came back the day after Lag BaOmer, so I missed all of the festive occasions here. Although a few blocks down, I don't know what they're celebrating. Someone said maybe the end of World War II or something. There are Russian flags and all sorts of flags going around, so there's something they're celebrating today. I'm not sure. Is it the end? Oh, this was the victory in Europe. The secular day. All right, Baruch Hashem. Be'ibud Rishayim Rina. With the although on one hand, it's an interesting contradiction. It's not my topic today. On one hand, when the Egyptians are drowning in the Red Sea, and the Malachim wanted to sing praise to Hashem, so Hashem said, "My sayadai tavu bayam, my creations are drowning in the sea. It is not a time for jubilation, because they're also human beings." And yet, we have another pasuk, a pasuk in Mishlei, that says, "Be'ibud rishayim rina," upon the downfall of the evildoers, there is joyous triumph and jubilation. It's actually a contradiction. Is it the concept that we have rachamim for our enemies? Or is it the concept that we rejoice when evil falls? But the simple answer is that both ideas are going on at the same time. We do not rejoice in the suffering of a human being because as far as we're concerned, we would be much happier if people would do tshuva, if people would come back to God, if people would exemplify the divine image. So when there is the destruction of people, there is a certain sadness that they did not do tshuva and they did not rectify the evil they caused. On the other hand, the fact that there is less evil in the world is a cause for joy and for simcha. So there is simultaneously a simcha that evil has been destroyed, but there's also a sadness that the evildoers didn't rectify their evil in a better way by doing tshuva and coming closer to Hashem. As Breuer told Rabbi Meir, right, the famous Gemara, when Rabbi Meir wanted to pray that his enemies be destroyed, they were Rishayim. So Breuer said, the Pasuk says, David HaMelech says, Yitamu chatoim min haaretz, let the sins vanish. Not chotim, not the sinners, but let the sins vanish. Urishayim odeinam. If the sins vanish, mimela, automatically, you're not going to have Rishayim. So in a sense, this is a day of celebration, although I have to go back and check what the Hebrew date was, but still, so I guess it is something to celebrate the fall of Nazism, the fall of, really, the closest that we have to the concept of Amalek, other than Malchus Yishmael that we're confronting now, which is a talk for another time. Anyway, I wanted to share, I heard that tonight there is a Shemitah refresher, and of course in many, many ways the laws of Shemitah are actually more relevant towards the middle and end of the year than at the very beginning, and therefore it's very good to have a refresher. And of course Shemitah was the mitzvah that was given in yesterday's Parsha, the idea of Shemitah. And I want to start off with what might be an unrelated text, but you'll see how it's going to be connected. That is, there is a Mishnah at the end of Maseches Kedushin that has two statements. The first statement is made by Rabbi Meir. Li'olam yolamed adam espino umnas nikia v'kala. A father or a parent has a halachic obligation to teach his son, his child, an umnas, a skill, a profession, a craft that is nikiya, that is clean. Essentially, what does it mean, clean? So some say clean means honest. And some say clean means shouldn't get too dirty, meaning teach him something that doesn't get too repulsive or the like. And kala, something that's relatively easy, meaning something that will not take up all of his time and energy, so he'll have time to learn Torah and be with his family and the like. So there's a halachic obligation on a parent to give a child, now again, why it says son and not daughter, that's an interesting concept. Certainly Chazal had the orientation that women would get married and wouldn't have to work outside of the home. In today's economy, if indeed it works the opposite way, then we would have to say that the obligation would be to train the daughter. But be it as it may, there is a chiyuv to give your child the wherewithal to make a parnasa. Because Chazal understood that poverty was not the appropriate derech. If Rahman Lassan, somebody is poor for circumstances beyond their control, that's a separate matter. But one does not deliberately create a cycle of poverty. One gives their son, their child, a parnasa. Again, that's something to think about, even looking at that statement alone. That has some interesting implications, particularly in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, we then go down to very long Mishnah, and a few paragraphs later, so to speak, there is a statement of Rebbe Noho Roy, who says, what are you talking about, jobs and making a living? Meiniach ani kol umnos sheva olam. I would throw away any type of profession. Ve'eini melamed esbini el Torah. I would teach my son only Torah. Forget about everything. Torah learning is it. Hashem will take care of whatever needs to be taken care of. So, b'pashtus, we seem to have a machlokas. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Norai. Where Rabbi Meir emphasizes what you might call the pragmatic, practical idea of giving your child a way of making a living. And Rav Nehurai is the ultimate idealist who says, forget about making a living, Torah learning is all that matters, nothing else makes the difference. Seems to be a machlokas that gets carried out in present day hashkafas. But the Briskerov asks a tremendously strong question. And he says, wait a second here. The Gemara in Maseches Erevin actually tells us that Rav Nehurai and Rabbi Meir are the same person. In fact, their name means the same thing. Meir in Ivrit means to enlighten. And Nehurai, like Nehura, also means to enlighten. And Rav Meir goes by different names, sometimes in the Hebrew version, sometimes by the Aramaic version. So the Briskerov says, if it's the same person, how could he say contradictory teachings? In his Rav Meir identity, he says, gotta work, gotta have a job, gotta have a profession of some sort. In the Rav Nehurai identity, he says, forget about professions, all that matters is Torah study, Hashem will take care. If it'll be two different people, so you could say it's a machlokas. It's the same person.
Is it Rav Meir Balanes?
Yes, it is. Rav Meir Balanes is in fact, although I would have to say, that Balanes really fits the Nehurai identity. I mean, learn Torah and Hashem will do miracles. maybe it's Rav Meir Balanes. But, okay. So this is the Briskerov's kasha, very, very strong, very, very strong question. So he answers with the following. He says, we can understand this Mishnah in light of another machlokes in Maseches Brachos. It's a well-known machlokes, also a very important machlokes, and it's a very similar question. And this is a machlokes on the verse we say in the Shema every day. We say, V'hayoyim Shemoa, right, the second paragraph of Shema, V'hayoyim Shemoa Tishmu al Mitzvosai, if you listen to my commandments, so Hashem says, V'nesati Esa B'sotcha L'femtecha, right, I will give you grain and grass for your animals, V'yasafta D'ganecha, and you will gather your grain. You will be able to harvest and gather your grain. Machlokes. Rabbi Yishmael says the following. He was the Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Yishmael was one of the Kohanim Gadolim. It's interesting that Chazal used the name Yishmael. We would never use that name today, and yet that was a name of great rabbis. Rabbi Yishmael says, if the Torah says that if you keep the mitzvahs, Hashem will give you the ability to gather your grain, we see that you're allowed to gather your grain, that you're allowed to have a parnasa. I don't consider it bittul Torah. It's something you're supposed to do. Which means, seems to be like Rabbi Meir. Meaning, if you match it up, Rabbi Yishmael's view seems to be Rabbi Meir's view, that a person should have a parnasa. But then we come to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, parnasa? What's going on with parnasa? Efsher she'adam yachrosh b'shas harisha. A person is going to plow when it's time to plow. V'zareya b'shas seria. He's going to plant when it's time to plant. And he's going to be kotzer b'shas ketzira. How can a person learn? How can a person waste his life on what is called chayei sha'ah, the ephemeral, temporary, physical status of this world, and every second that he's not osek in learning and mitzvos, he is forsaking eternity. Chas v'shalom, he says, that the Torah allows a person to pursue a parnasa. This is what he says. And therefore, when the pasuk says, you will gather your grain, that is talking about where the Jewish people are not doing the will of God. Because if they are doing the will of God, melachtan nasis al yidei acherim, their work would be done by others. They would win the lottery. The non-Jews would come in and, you know, give them everything that they need. Now, Tosfos asks the obvious question. Well, wait a second. They're interpreting the words v'yasafta digonecha. And Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says that pasuk is talking about where the Jewish people are not righteous. But the whole pasuk is saying, if you keep my commandments, this is what you'll do. How can you possibly say that the pasuk is talking about where the Jewish people are not righteous? So Tosfos explains, he doesn't mean they're Rishayim. If they're Rishayim, they're not going to get that bracha even for them to gather the grain. But it means they're not on the highest level they could be. If they would be on the highest level, there'd be no parnasa. That would be necessary. Now, the Gemara then goes on and says a very interesting thing. Many people followed the path of Rabbi Yishmael. They combined their parnasa and their limud haTorah, and Hashem blessed them. And many people followed the path of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Forget about Parnassa, God will take care of me. And they were starving. So, you walk away from the Gemara, and the Gemara seems to indicate that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's path was not the appropriate path for most of Klal Yisrael, that Klal Yisrael should follow the pathway of Rabbi Shimon. By the way, I do want to point out that this is not really a debate about Kolel versus working. You see, you have to understand, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is a much more extreme position than Kolel. Rabbi Yishmael is basically saying a person's hishtadlus requires him to have some economic plan. You can't simply say, I don't know where the money's coming from, but I don't care, Hashem will put the money in front of me. Rabbi Yishmael says you're mechuyev in hishtadlus, and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says you don't need hishtadlus. Now, Kolel is a form of hishtadlus. A person makes a budget. In other words, you have to understand that people jump to the conclusion that according to Rabbi Yishmael, Kolel is not appropriate. That's not necessarily the case. What is not appropriate, according to Rabbi Yishmael, is to enter this type of life without any type of hishtadlus as to where the money's coming. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai took the very extreme position that if one is truly a righteous person, you don't have to have any plan at all. God will put the money in front of you. And on that, the Gemara says, the people who tried to live that way were not matzliach. But the Vilna Gaon has a very fascinating diuk. The Vilna Gaon says, the Gemara doesn't simply say the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, but it says many tried to follow Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and they were not matzliach. So the Vilna Gaon is medayek. It is not the pathway for the many. But there are individual people who are on such a madrega of Kedusha that they can follow the way of Rav Shimon bar Yochai. And Hashem will take care of them. By the way, this also needs some explanation. How do you identify yourself as someone who's able and worthy to follow the pathway of Rav Shimon bar Yochai? I want to make a point that the primary quality is a quality of emuna and mesiras nefesh. Meaning to say, if you're a person who can't live without air conditioning and meat every night, that is by definition, you're not a Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai person. You can't have your luxuries and expect Hashem to deliver them to you without hishtadlus. If you're a person, and of course this, when I say, I don't just mean the husband, but if the couple together, because it has to be a joint decision, are people whose level of emunah is so great and whose willingness, and I say it has to be a joint decision, is so profound that whatever the hardship, they will accept it with love and with joy, then it is yitachain that perhaps they could follow the midah of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. So it's not a question of someone has a good head for learning. That's not And that's not our standard here. The standard is a depth of emunah and mesiras nefesh. By the way, this reminds me of an interesting story. I said, no matter what the hardship, they tell the story that a Ben Taira, a yeshiva bacher, was engaged to a girl, and he wanted to introduce his kala to Rav Shach. So he brings his kala over to Rav Shach, and you know, they're talking, and the kala says to Rav Shach, he says, no matter what the hardship, no matter what the sacrifice, no matter how difficult life is going to be, I'm going to be with my husband so he can learn, he could steig. No matter what, I'm willing to undergo every hardship. So anyway, when she leaves the room, Rav Shach says, break off the shidduch. What's the pshat? He says that if a person comes into the marriage saying, I know the life of Torah is rough and hard and bad, but I'm willing to be a martyr, that's not going to be good, because eventually people can't be martyrs forever. If somebody truly feels that they're suffering, 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 we can take suffering for a short